welcome to Season 7 of The Process Podcast, an interview series exploring the process of survival as a creative. For this season, we're going back to our roots and talking to all sorts of creatives from a wide variety of industries, backgrounds, and creative endeavors about how they make it all work, from mental health to relationships to money to the creative process itself, and a whole lot more. I'm your host, Shannon Byrne, and I'm just trying to figure it out like the rest of us. Big thanks to the band Blessed for letting us use our song Endure as our intro music for this season. You can find their music at Blessed, that's B-L-E-S-S-E-D, band.bandcamp.com, or wherever you buy your music. And to Hannah Spencer for all of the design and branding and the strategy work she does for us. And Lonnie Webb for running our social media. Thank you for listening. Hope y'all dig it. Hey, hello. First and foremost, I hope everyone continues to be healthy and safe and doing whatever best serves you right now as much as you can. Hope you're doing okay. Hope everyone's doing okay. Welcome to episode 91 of The Process. 91, y'all. This conversation is with Drew Reichman and Mitchell Trainer of the band Blessed. If that name sounds familiar to you, it's because you just heard it in the intro of the show. Blessed were kind enough to let us use their song called Endure for the season's intro. Little did I know how relevant that song truly would be to this year, time period, point in all of our lives. So, Blessed is a band that formed in 2015 in British Columbia's Fraser Valley. They are an experimental art rock band. They've been described as post-punk, post-hardcore. Their Bandcamp talks about how they bonded and shared a creative objective around amalgamating elements of post-hardcore, minimalism, new wave, krautrock, and punk. We chatted last summer when I was in New York there in British Columbia. We talked on the phone. The core theme of this conversation is really around artistic longevity and also doing things differently, perhaps not being pressured to follow the norms, or just the norms not even adhering to them for an art rock band from Fraser Valley, British Columbia. And I feel that there's some messages in here that can be applied to this, whatever the new normal is going to be. And essentially being thoughtful, intentional, strategic to a certain point, and keeping a vision in mind when creating and planning for your art and for your art business. So yeah, I think you'll find helpful messages in this conversation. That is a general theme. We also talk about their intentional approach to balancing their day jobs, the experience of having a creative career in a small town in British Columbia that's maybe not very common. They were kind enough to go into great detail around how Canadian funding of music and the arts works, and also detail the wildly difficult process of coming to America from abroad, and specifically from Canada. Not only difficult, but also expensive. I found it really enlightening that it will definitely be helpful to other Canadian bands, and I think it's good for fans to understand how that works and what all goes into it, because, you know, y'all, buy the records of the bands you love. Just do it. The systems do not make it easy for them to not just make a living, but like more basic than that, just be able to like come here and play or put out their music, even if they are supporting themselves in other ways. You know what I mean? We also talked about why they self-released their excellent album, Salt, which, by the way, is on Bandcamp. Their Bandcamp's blessedband.bandcamp.com for pay what you want. So you can grab that for however much you're willing to pay. Advice on when and how to build a team around your band. And there's some really good stuff in there for younger bands as well. They also share essentially like how I noticed when I saw them live that they seemed very tight. They had great energy together, but also just seemed to be a well-oiled machine. They share different ways that they improve communication with each other as a band over time, and some stuff I've never heard of before, which was cool. What's worked for them in building longevity, which is tied into that, as well as looking at long-term life goals versus the pressure to be prolific in today's day and age. I obviously really enjoyed this episode. They are not only just polite Canadians, but also just nice people. Definitely check out their music. They, as with everyone, are impacted by COVID. They were going to be releasing some new material and touring, I believe. Definitely playing some shows. I think touring around this time. That has obviously been put on hold for now. Most of them still have their day jobs, but, you know, it's rough out there. Definitely check out their music. We link at theprocess.co. We link to their Bandcamp as well as all their social media accounts. If you like what you hear, give them a follow to keep up with when they do release stuff and how you can support or see them live eventually. I failed to mention, they share the names of a bunch of bands and record labels to check out, especially from their local area. So for all those links, definitely go to theprocess.co/episodes. You'll find them there. Hang in there, everyone. Thinking about you. See you next week.
How were your days other than rainy?
Everything's pretty calm right now, to be honest. We're not doing any touring anymore for the rest of 2019, and we just completed the last show of 2019 with our friends in a band called Dead Sock, and we went to Vancouver Island with them as kind of a one-off date because we hadn't been to the island in a long time. So we just got back from that, and I think everyone's kind of settling back in to get creative again.
Nice. Vancouver Island, I've only been once, but it immediately became one of my favorite places on Earth.
Ah, true. Where in Vancouver Island were you?
We stayed in Tofino.
Oh, true. That's gorgeous.
It was stunning. I was like, do I live here now? I live here now, right?
Yeah. I mean, despite like how intense it is to live in BC, it definitely has its perks.
Yeah, I definitely want to dive into that at some point. But it's like living there and the impact that has.
True, yeah.
A little bit more broad. You've played a lot of shows this year, huh?
Yeah, this year was fairly intense. It's half of the reason we decided to take the last half of the year off. Generally, between the first EP and the second EP, we tried to do 100 shows per release, and we came pretty close with both of them, but an album's life cycle seems to be a little longer, so we're hoping to utilize more of next year to do a couple more dates and maybe release a single or two or something along that line. I think we didn't realize at the beginning of the year the toll it was going to take to essentially start doing dates in January and do them almost nonstop all the way to August. I think we were only fortunate enough to have like 3 or 4 weeks at home in that stretch, like consecutively between the dates. So I think everyone's just kind of getting acclimated to like what it's like to be at home for more than a couple weeks at a time currently. But I think everyone's settling in finally now.
Wow, yeah. Is it nice to come home when it's like kind of rainy season again? And do you enjoy that atmosphere for unwinding and getting back into it?
I mean, BC, it doesn't get cold necessarily. It's very similar to Seattle in terms of its climate and what's going on. But I mean, we live like an hour and a half outside of Vancouver in like kind of this little tri-city area of a couple smaller towns where it's a little more affordable to live. But yeah, I mean, at that point of touring and after that many shows, I don't think it matters where I come home to as long as it's like a consistent space that I don't have to think about leaving again. Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair. So is music all of your full-time thing now? In that case, you're only home for 4 days at a time?
No, music is none of our full-time gigs. Just living in BC, the cost of being here is so expensive, and niche, weird, self-released art rock hasn't created the demand to supplement all of our incomes. But I mean, a couple of us are fortunate enough to have moved down to part-time work with the band supporting the other days. So I mean, we're kind of on the path, hopefully, towards that. But we plan in a super long and intentional fashion that tries to keep everything pretty measured and pretty reasonable in terms of what we expect and want out of a creative career.
How do you make the touring schedule work with other jobs? Are they pretty flexible?
Yeah, we've been super fortunate just in the capacity that we've found jobs or employers over the 15 years that we've lived here that either A, appreciate what we do to a certain extent. Maybe they don't love the music, but maybe they understand the passion behind it. Maybe they understand, given the amount of touring and the seriousness that's put forward when we're doing it, that it's not a garage band type deal. So I think just due to the amount of passion and touring and previous projects that we've been in, we're granted some leniency in the capacity of like employers being more willing to facilitate our careers just by letting us off. I don't know. Yeah, it's like, this is like a common thing that I always wonder how bands make it work between their day jobs and touring lifestyle, because so many bands now that touring is becoming kind of the most lucrative aspect. And I know it's like passé for people to like use the term lucrative or like think about their personal business in terms of what they're doing in a band. But the fact of the matter is, like, I don't think any of us are looking for a lavish lifestyle, but paying your rent and eating is kind of like a great standard to set when you're thinking about long-term planning with like any creative project.
Yeah, good things are important. Shelter and eating, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, one of us does like social media management for a realty company, and he's able to do that when we're on tour. Two of us do like high-end interior painting, and Mitch, our bass player, is with me. He sells like high-end like men's fashion wear, and like this is in these small cities that we live in. The biggest being Abbotsford, which two of us live in. That's 150,000 people. And then Jake, our drummer, lives in the city called Chilliwack. That's like 70,000. And Mitch lives in the city of Mission, which is like 15,000 people.
Yeah. I was talking to a buddy recently, and he was saying, he was like also a musician, and both his friends are. And he was saying how he tells a lot of his friends to go get like customer experience jobs with startups, so like customer support jobs with startups, because you can usually do that job from anywhere and work like weird hours, which I thought
yeah, was interesting. Yeah, I mean, that seems like the ideal situation now in like, as technology is moving forward, it does seem like the ideal scenario that you could find a job that only necessitates your laptop. Only one of us has that currently, unfortunately, but yeah, down the line, I'm not sure what that looks like in terms of, I assume in a larger city like Toronto or New York or Los Angeles, there's a lot more demand for those kind of jobs. There are a lot more inroads to those kind of jobs, but unfortunately, a piece of living where we do is that the ceiling of opportunity is incredibly low, which also, I think, being a band that started when some of our members were like 21 from a small city, it really reinforces the idea of touring being the aspect that you need to focus on above everything else. And I think that's largely in part due to recognizing like the ceilings of where you live and what's going on. Like, we did our first full 50-day tour, I think, just when our first EP came out.
2016.
Yeah. So I think that's just been drilled into us when we see the opportunities that people in larger cities have that aren't necessarily presented in smaller towns.
Right. Have you ever thought about trying to move to a bigger city, or are you pretty content with making it work from where you are?
I mean, that's kind of like a question that I think weighs heavy on a lot of the members. We're all from here for the most part. And if we're not, we've lived here for the majority of our lives. And Canada kind of doesn't present you with many options besides Vancouver, Montreal, and Toronto. And unfortunately, like economically right now, Vancouver and Toronto are incredibly expensive to live in. They're incredibly difficult to survive in and thrive in, especially as a creative person trying to find creative jobs. And I'm not saying there aren't people that make it work, but I do think to an extent you sacrifice the quality of life. But again, the trade-off there being the opportunity cost. We've definitely flirted with the idea for more than a couple of years of heading to Montreal. I used to live in Montreal, and Montreal is kind of like this seeming last bastion of like being able to live in a metropolis while not paying $2,000 a month in rent in Canada. But other than that, Canada kind of leaves you with major prairie cities, which would be like Calgary, Edmonton, Saskatoon, and Winnipeg, or the eastern coast, like New Brunswick and Nova Scotia, which like the only major city that I think most Americans would recognize over there would be Halifax, if that even.
Yeah, that's where that band Map Eyes is from, right? Halifax.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Forgive my ignorance on this because I don't know how it works and I haven't looked into it, probably mostly out of jealousy. But Canada offers like a lot of funding for arts, right? And grants and stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Canada offers funding on a federal level, a provincial level, and sometimes there's even private grant funding. Our federal level is called FACTOR, and basically an artist is put into like categories of like a stage one, stage two, stage three artist. What stage you get put in is based on prerequisites. For us, like we're considered like a level one FACTOR band, so we're able to like get grants to go and play showcases like South by Southwest. And yeah. That's the federal level, and then the national level, and then the provincial level, it's same thing. They have like grant programs. Like we are super stoked on the people at Music BC. They help us out a ton and we really appreciate it. They offer us like travel grants for touring, as well as through a program called Amplify BC, marketing funding for like radio publication. Radio publicity and like social media marketing, as well as opportunities to make music videos, and as well as if you record in the province of British Columbia, they offer funding for that as well. So yeah, Canada is really fortunate to have like those programs available, and it certainly helps. I think it certainly helps the morale of a project when someone else is willing to put money behind it. But I mean, grants also, just to speak to the other side of it, there is that funding available, and bands are like incredibly fortunate to be able to tap into it. But there is like kind of this top-down thing that happens in Canada where people who are incredibly successful already, people who are making or whose companies are making an incredible amount of money in music in Canada, generally have the most access to these grants as well. So a lot of these grants are holding up giants who already have an immense amount of power and money in the Canadian music industry. Grants are also, if you're talking to like a young band who's maybe about to go on their first tour or maybe wants to do their first video, I find that the grant system is incredibly hard to get into and incredibly hard to like navigate, getting established with FACTOR, understanding how it works, getting established with Music BC. Like, these people are definitely there to help you, but the hurdles to getting into them are pretty extreme for a lot of young bands who maybe don't have the business sense. They know what they want to do, they have the drive, or they don't have the words, they don't have the capacity. I mean, there is options in Canada. It's created jobs through the sense of people are solely grant writers. A band comes to them and some of them even operate on, they get 10% of the grant if they get it for you. And you just have to provide them with a certain set of details, a certain set of assets and so forth and so forth. But the funding is definitely incredible. But it's definitely not without its faults. And in terms of like international funding, France, Germany, and a lot of European countries actually have much better arts funding than Canada has. But of course, we spend 6 months of our year in your country. And comparatively between the two, obviously Canada is a haven just because we offer it at all.
Yeah,
right.
Totally.
And it always surprises me that the United States, I mean, obviously at a federal level, given your population, I understand how that's not feasible, but at a state's level, it always blows me away that places like California and New York, or even municipally in Texas, don't offer these kind of grants for music.
Yeah, same. It is pretty mind-boggling, and the funding just gets, decreases more and more, especially with current situations happening.
That seems to be the state of things. And I mean, unfortunately, Canada is heading down a similar path currently. We're currently dealing with kind of politically what could be one of the worst governments we've ever had, for sure. And in Ontario, they already elected the ultra far-right conservative. And one of the first things they did within a couple months was they cut the Ontario Music Fund, which is the provincial level in Ontario. They cut it in half. And we firsthand got to witness a lot of people suffer who have jobs in music, who've been able to live off music with help from the Ontario Music Fund, are questioning whether they can continue down the same path that they've had for the past 10, 20 years in some cases. So we're waiting to see right now what the path forward looks like.
That is a bummer. I was going to say, too, it sounds like the funding encourages businesses or bands to look at themselves as businesses, which is great and what they should be doing if that's the goal. But also, I can't help but to think of those who, like, the impact of art that's created by someone who's not necessarily trying to make it a business, too. You know what I mean? Someone who's, like, has a teaching career and is happy to just tour in the summer, but is still, like, creating really meaningful art.
They'll help them out, too. Nobody is kind of cast aside on their choices. It's more simply that they look for organization and that you're not, they're not looking for you to be successful or nothing. It's more just that they don't want to give money to somebody who submits a grant that just says, I really want to go play South by Southwest, and that's it, right? Like, right. They do ask, like, why do you want to do this? What is the purpose of doing this? Like, and if you're a teacher who only wants to tour in the summer, but you get an opportunity to go play South by Southwest, you're definitely still eligible, even if you're not thinking of your project in terms of, like, financial feasibility and long-term success and growth, et cetera, et cetera.
I remember during the show that I saw you all play at Transpacos, you mentioned, how grateful you were to be there, but also how expensive it is to play in America, with, like, everything we just talked about, but also with taxes. What makes it, I'm assuming it's worth it to tour here so much. What makes it worth it?
So, I mean, the United States as a whole, this kind of ties in actually to what we were talking about earlier when you mentioned, like, have you considered moving to another city in Canada? America has so many choices and places and vibrant communities and cities compared to Canada, which, if you're looking at places with above a million people, Canada has three, where in the States, if you start counting metro populations, like, y'all have an unbelievable amount of places that people can move. Like, I think something we're constantly surprised by in the States is, you're playing in New Orleans and you meet someone from Boston. You're playing in New York and you meet someone from Ohio. You're playing in Ohio, you meet someone from Miami. You're playing in Los Angeles, you meet someone from Seattle. Like, people just have so many options in terms of the places they can go and the places they can live and the experiences they can have in such a populous country with so many, like, population centers. So, I mean, for a Canadian musician, it's definitely possible to make a career exclusively in Canada. A lot of bands from Canada who do go play the States do have a much easier time up here and do focus a lot of their effort up here, partly because of the grant system, partly because when you're young, it's really hard to get across the border. So you establish a much better following initially when you're here. You maybe spend the first 2 to up to even 10 years in some people's cases only playing Canada. So the scales are so unbalanced by the time you actually want to start heading to the States that I think there are bands in Canada who play to 800 to 1500 people up here who would be pulling very similar numbers to Blessed in the States just because people wait so long to go down there. But in saying that, like, the process to come to the United States as an international musician as I'm sure you're mildly aware with in some capacity, given like there's a huge fiasco with people trying to come to South by Southwest a couple of years ago, and it's not exactly under the radar, but in terms of being from another country, coming there, the process is wildly difficult to make happen because to start, you have to first apply with the Canadian Federation of Music and become a union member. The Canadian Federation of Music is in partnership with the American Federation of Music. When you send in your visa application to the States, they represent you sort of as like your lawyer or as a benefactor, just to say, yes, this band is part of our group and they are a legitimate thing and they do want to come into your country. And those unions have union dues, which runs about $250 to $300 Canadian a year. And then on top of that, you have to do the visa application itself, which for us, we do a P2 visa, which is basically there's like P2 and then there's O2. And O2 is when you're a little bit more established and you have a little bit more credibility. And then P2 is just for bands that would be of our size, don't necessarily have celebrity status that they're looking for the O2s. And I say that in like quotes because they just want you to have like be playing bigger venues and stuff like that for an O2. But that visa application itself is, there's a fee that goes to the American Federation of Music for processing it, as well as a fee that goes to Homeland Security for processing it. And then you have to pay a fee also for each member of your band in terms of that getting processed as well. So the application process usually for our band of five usually comes up to about $2,000 for the visa itself. And then we have to pay our year of fees, which is about $200 each, or $250 to $300 each. So you're looking for a year, that PT visa lasts about a year. So you're looking for about a year of touring, about $3,000 to come to the States. That's one of the reasons why when we get this visa, we come down and we try to play a lot of shows just to like amortize the cost over a bunch of shows to make it more worth its value. But then it's also the process happens and then you get to your border and border guards don't know how to deal with it and stuff like that. So it gets really scary in the sense that like sometimes border guards make you pay more fees or make you get certain documents because they're not really understand how the process goes. And it's really hard to tell a border guard that you know more than them. And we have all of the proper paperwork when they're trying to tell you the other paperwork to pay more fees and stuff like that. So it's really intense process of like you pay all this money and then you could get to the border and you have to pay all this other money because this border guard thinks you have to do something else. But we feel that playing those shows in the States, playing in the States as much as we play in Canada is valuable to the type of art we create because especially with niche art, like it thrives more in places like New York and LA and places Austin and Chicago, like the really big populations. And in Canada, you only really have three of those.
It's kind of just a matter of demographics when you're thinking about it in that regard, because we're in a town of 150,000 people. How many people in a Mennonite town in British Columbia are going to want to engage with niche experimental or like avant art in any capacity? But like, I kind of just to expand upon what Mitch was saying a little bit, like the ambiguity around proper border protocol is really hard to deal with because just this year we were denied on one of our entries for not having a carnet, which is essentially a piece of paper that lists every piece of equipment that you have in your vehicle going down to the States so that when you come back to Canada, they can account that you have everything you went down with and you didn't sell it and make money that you're trying to not declare, et cetera, et cetera. So we were denied for not having this. And the only place to get one is through Canada's Federal Chamber of Commerce. And we ended up on the phone with Homeland Security, who then told us that we definitely don't need a carnet. That is for people who are like Casey Musgraves if she's coming to play Canada, needs a carnet because they have like $1 million worth of lights and equipment and microphones, et cetera, et cetera. We're definitely traveling with far less than $1 million in equipment to the United States. But we had to go to a separate border. We got pulled in again. We explained to them that we'd been on the phone with Homeland Security, and they told us that we don't need this carnet. It's not applicable to a P2 visa. And we sat there for a while, and he comes back, and then they denied us again because they said we needed somebody from America to be selling our merch. We as Canadians were allowed to bring merch in to sell it if it's under a certain amount and it's documented and listed, but we can't personally sell it at the shows, and they had denied us again for that. And the only reason we actually got to come down to do our first 2 weeks of dates was by essentially having to look a border guard in the eyes and saying, if you do this, you're going to fuck my whole life up. So, I mean, it is like getting more and more precarious, it feels, to try and come down and play the United States. But unfortunately, if we wanted to make like Americana, and like this isn't meant to disparage the genre that I'm going to use as an example, but if we wanted to play like Americana style folk rock and we could make good money, maybe playing in cities like Red Deer, Alberta, or Hinton, Alberta, or Thunder Bay, Ontario, like these cities where that kind of music, maybe you actually could play to 200 people. But the fact of the matter is we make weird ass music, and that just doesn't flourish in small towns because there isn't enough people to support like outsider art in a lot of smaller communities, unfortunately, like at least to a capacity that makes it feasible to imagine sustainability and being able to feed yourself, et cetera, et cetera. So it's kind of a catch-22 that we just have to come play the States despite all these hurdles, because you can't really have a career in outsider art and stay in Canada exclusively.
That makes sense. And it makes sense that even if you do have like a super supportive fan base and somewhere enough to sustain you financially, like you said, it's not big enough.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't obstruct us from still playing these cities. Being from a small town in Canada, we like really value playing those places. Mm-hmm. It's just that we can't play it exclusively. Like right. The idea of never being able to come to New York again or Los Angeles or Austin or Chicago again would be a serious hindrance to like the long-term viability of doing anything, but at least in our field, like we could definitely, I mean, I don't mean to sound like fatalist about it, we could definitely make something work if that wasn't on the table or if for some reason that wasn't in our future, but it's definitely cutting off a toe,
right? Because then not like you can rely on streams or album sales, because
yeah, it's the demographic,
not the way it works.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that's the shape of the music industry today, too. Is there's not as much money in that anymore. And we sell, like, playing shows is where we sell most of our records, too. So for us, music sales does come from playing those shows as well.
Right.
Yeah. It's a bit of a forced hand. I would struggle to, off the top of my head, think of the past where you don't go to the States, but you're able to support yourself. I do know one band that avoided it for a long time by going to Europe for most of the like infancy of, I think their first two records, they never set foot in the States. They were a band from Abbotsford, actually, where we live. But even they eventually had to come to terms with the fact that they had to start going down.
What band is that?
They're called We Say Party, We Say Die.
Yeah, I appreciate you sharing all of that info and diving into logistics. I'm sure it's not like the number one thing you wanted to talk about, but I think it's super helpful for people to empathize with, but also for bands to hear.
I mean, to be honest, like, it's all stuff that I wanted to hear when I was young, and I don't find it boring just on the basis of, like, as a Canadian musician, if you do want to make a run at, and I'm not, and I don't even use the term make a run at in terms of success. Like my definition of success would be being able to pay my rent and my phone bill and eat. But that I think, is a step that you have to acknowledge to yourself. And I think being Canadian, like, these are just factors that we have to reconcile with. And I think the more we talk about it and the more we share with each other, the more beneficial it is for everyone. I definitely look at music through the lens of, like, a positive sum game. The better everybody's doing is better for everybody else. And if we know something that somebody else doesn't, then I'm really happy to, like, share that or illuminate on it, or at least share my thoughts on it, so that two heads coming together being better than one. Like, I find it massively interesting how bands manage to make it work in the current landscape, because I think it's rare. So, yeah.
Do you find that the community there has a similar attitude? Is it, like, pretty normal for bands to, at least on a, maybe it's not on a podcast, but in conversation, talking about this stuff, or do most kind of keep to themselves?
Like in our community in Abbotsford?
Or, like, larger Canadian music community?
I find, like, in the DIY world, fans that have had to do a lot of things on their own are very open and willing to share, like, the experience they're having. And I also think, like, being an artist from a small town in Canada who has come down to the States, I think initially, like, on the creative and artistic side of what we do, it was easy to feel a lot of imposter syndrome, and it was easy to feel a lot of the times like you're somebody's little brother. And I think being from where we are, a small town, and making niche art, it's something we reconcile with a lot, is, like, this idea that because of where we're from, or because we're not active in, like, bigger scenes, that we're lesser than to some degree. But, like, you find as you travel, and as you get to play with bands who you really like, that these people are people who have been in the same situation as you at some point in their lives. They're more than willing to help, and they're more than willing to share, and they're more than willing to, like, especially emotionally, it feels like that gate is being opened a lot more. And it feels like you can really have meaningful conversations with other artists, even if you only spend a day with them and you play one show with them on tour somewhere, but you're both on tour for months at a time. And it definitely feels like artists are willing to, like, rely on each other. And I would never discount the fact that anything that Blessed has in regards to what other people define as success, or whatever they perceive us as, is due largely in part, or maybe solely in part, to every other artist and band we've ever run into. I think a career in the arts, to a certain degree, is just a culmination of the amount of people that you're fortunate enough to form bonds with. And I don't think it's all luck. There is work to it. But I do think getting to be friends with people and realizing that they want to help, and a lot of artists have the capacity to share and help with ideas, and touring emotionally, everything with each other. Like, I do find that people are very willing to be open and help each other. I don't find that we run into many artists who are touring or in the league that we want to be in that are closed off and won't talk to you.
That's good, especially since they probably got to that point from other people being kind to them.
I do feel like it's cyclical to some degree.
Yeah, that's kind of relevant, slight pivot. I realize I said the shows at Transpagos is at the Footlight, I think, that I saw you all play at.
Yeah.
I go to a lot of shows.
Yeah.
When I saw you play, I definitely had, I was like, wow, they seem very professional and, like, very tight, and, like, either a band who practices a lot or just has, like, really good chemistry. And not to say, I mean, a lot of bands I see are professional, but I don't know. You just felt kind of next level. At what point, especially for, like, as you said, like, the indie band creating art rock or, like, avant-garde rock, at what point do you feel like you got there? Is that, do you feel like you've been there since day one? Because that was my first time seeing you. Or, yeah, or was there, like, a turning point?
I guess the first thing to acknowledge would be maybe that I don't think we see it because we're inside of it. I mean, it's incredibly flattering what you're saying. And I think a lot of the time when we play with bands and when we see bands, what resonates with us is watching people really lock in and people play very well together. And like, I do think there's a facet of our enjoyment of music that stems from watching people feel like they're very much a team and what they're doing is intuitive and well rehearsed with each other. But I mean, from the inside out, I don't think it's something that we cognizantly are choosing, more so that it just stems from, I mean, where we are. There isn't a lot of cultural events going on. I'm not using my Friday and Saturday nights to, I don't know, like, we're not doing much out here when we live in such a small city. And the idea of going to an event in Vancouver, like a prerequisite for it is having 3 hours of driving and a tank of gas on top of whatever it is you want to do in the city. So we do have a really fortunate and privileged amount of time to play together and be creative with each other. We also spend a ton of time on tour, which is kind of part and parcel of the visa thing, where it costs so much money to come down and we really have to make it worth it when we invest that amount of money in trying to come down. Do you have anything you want to add to that?
I don't know. I think we definitely talk about our attitude on stage when we practice. When we practice, we tell ourselves that we want to come off like professional and like try to play. I don't know where I'm going with this.
Another thing that struck me was when a band does give that off, it also feels like they worked to be there, but also really want to be there. And, you know, sometimes it's more like, it doesn't always feel that way.
I mean, I definitely think as a group, there isn't any one of us who doesn't recognize how wild it is to be from, like, I'm from Saskatoon originally. Mitch is from Mission. Like, we're just from these small cities and provinces in Canada. And I think when I was 17, if you had told me I was going to visit New York, let alone play New York, let alone play New York on a show put on by one of my favorite, like, blogs and labels to exist, like, there's definitely a sense of immense privilege getting to be in that room and on that stage. Like, I would go to those shows if Blessed wasn't playing them and I was in that area. And if that comes across and that registers, then I'm really happy, because honestly, I do think just being where we're from, we do feel very grateful to get to have the experiences that we want to, that we get to experience, And like, at the risk of being too open or too vulnerable, like, we were playing in Nashville on that tour, and it must have been through Dan or somebody that Pyle, we stayed at their place. They just relocated down to Nashville. If you would have told me at 20 years old that I was going to be staying at the people from Pyle's house, and they would have come and seen my show in Nashville, I don't know. I wouldn't have believed you, even maybe, just because I'm from a town of 150,000 people in BC.
It's funny that you bring that up for a couple of reasons. One is I stayed with them too when I drove across the country. I interviewed Rick a while back, and that was also like, I don't play music, but they are one of my very favorite modern bands. So that was very surreal. And also, I think Chappie is how I learned about Blessed.
Oh, true. Right,
like, he posted about you guys and, like, you being one of his favorite bands right now.
Yeah, I know. We felt incredibly, like, just grateful to him. Like, I saw the Brooklyn Vegan article where he listed us as one of the things he was listening to on tour. And we're not, like, incredibly close, I think, by, like, standard definition. But I don't know if he knows what that meant to us being from where we are.
Yeah.
So yeah, totally. It's really nice to be championed by people that you love. It's like an incredible feeling. And I think that feeds into that graciousness and like that, I mean, the idea that we feel lucky to even be doing what we're doing.
Totally. I definitely want, if we have time, to ask you how you all like your journey into music, but also you mentioned the show. I think you're talking about Exploding in Sound. I know Salt was self-released, right? So I'll put that out yourself. What was the motivation or like the driving factor behind that rather than trying to sign to a label like Exploding in Sound? Or I could think of a ton of others who'd probably love to have you.
So the first two EPs came out on two different labels, like one did Canada and one did America. Kingfisher Blues in Canada released it up here. And he's released music for Juju and, the list is so long because he puts out like two records a month. Like, it's incredible. He's super prolific at what he puts out and it's super admirable. And like, it's all based on his love for music. And then Coin Toss out of Albuquerque handled the state side of releasing the first two EPs that we put out. Coin Toss actually ended up deciding to not release records anymore before Salt had come out. And we had kind of been flirting with the idea of how we wanted to release the record. And Blessed spent the first couple of years of the band like pretty much doing everything on our own, from booking, from managing it, financially managing it, doing our own grants, figuring out how to get into the States. Everything was done in-house. And it was kind of one of the last bastions of like operating a band that we hadn't done independently. And I think there was just a sense of looking at things in the long term. We definitely aren't averse to the idea of a label releasing our music, but I think there was something to be said for, well, if we do a lot of things in-house already, maybe this would be an incredible learning experience to try and put this together and understand what a label goes through and understand like the process of putting out a record properly through our own channels. And I think with hindsight being 2020, now that it's out, it's going to make the relationship, if and when we decide to have a label release future music, I hope we have a more empathetic ear and a better understanding of like the process that they would want to go through, or at least hear them out from a more educated platform than we would have previously to releasing it on our own. But I mean, a large part of releasing it on our own was just the experience and knowing that we wanted to tour it really hard and get it out just via the channels that we had built touring. And touring is where like 80% of our record sales were coming from already. And I think that helped reduce a lot of the fear of putting it out on our own.
Do you mind sharing some of the lessons that you learned throughout that process?
I mean, it's mostly just like the actual act of getting your music pressed and getting your music driving, getting it shipped up here. Like the process of getting records into this country, as we already like kind of elaborated, was nearly as hard as getting your band across as it is trying to explain to them why you're bringing 500 records across the border from like a store in Anacortes. And we were really fortunate to have the Business Records, which is a store in Anacortes. They were kind enough to let us ship our records to them. They're two awesome people who run that store just in a small town, like kind of by Bellingham in Seattle. But I mean, on top of that, just managing expectations. I don't know. Like, there's so many facets of releasing a record that sometimes feel passe to talk about, like hiring a publicist to work the record essentially, and doing radio. We tried doing radio with people who we'd met at a couple festivals a couple times over that had made us feel secure in that. And we were looking at all the numbers and managing all that on our side, like, were we happy with the results, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, to be honest, like, I actually think most bands end up doing what we do now at our level because you have to be self-sufficient and get these things done through your own channels a lot of the time. So I don't know, actually, in hindsight, if it's the best way to put this. I wonder how much it taught us that we wouldn't have learned if a label had released it.
I've heard, like, in listening to other podcasts and talking to folks, like, it definitely helps to know how these things work when you, whether or not you continue to do it yourself, just to have an idea of, like, what to look for and, like, be able to have those conversations and
I also think we just have an admiration for a lot of bands who did do it that way when they were existing. But yeah, I don't know what the future of it looks like, but I like definitely hindsight being what it is. Like, I'm really glad we did it the way we did.
Yeah.
It felt like the appropriate path at the time, for sure.
And now you have management, right?
Yeah, actually, we've been really lucky over the course of the SALT campaign. We've been, like, super fortunate with an amazing manager who definitely doesn't, like, step on our toes and respects what we want to do. There's been no hindrance on that front. So we've been really fortunate to have somebody who essentially you get to treat as a friend who has a knowledge of what you want to be doing that you can bounce ideas off of and hear out what they want to do and hear out what they think the best path forward to getting where you want to go is. I mean, that's been a really nice thing that we've definitely felt no hindrance from.
In terms of like advice to other artists, when it comes to management, is there anything in particular you would tell them to look for when they get to that point?
I would say be very cognizant of if you're at that point. I definitely think we are on the incredibly early side of making that step. And if the relationship didn't feel mutually beneficial and like it was somebody who understood that we're a band who wants to release records well into like 10 to 15 years later of the band, hopefully, I feel like we wouldn't have done it. I also just feel like a lot of artists, a lot of the time, I understand getting inundated with tons of work, and there's so many aspects of trying to be in a band that aren't creative and aren't necessarily fun. But I also think if you outsource that work too early to someone who you don't trust, you might just end up in a relationship where you feel like you're being misrepresented, or you feel like you're not being heard, or you feel like you're losing control of the project that you're in. Or, I mean, it's a call where I would say, I think the best advice I ever got in regards to like the team aspect of being in a band is hold out as long as you possibly can and do everything as much as you can yourself until you feel like it's impeding on the creative aspect of what you need to do. Like, if you're doing so much that you don't have time to write songs, then, I mean, maybe it is time to look at that. But, like, I don't know. I also heard really good advice. I think it was I was listening to a podcast with somebody from, I think it was Double Double Whammy, but I could be wrong. They were saying, like, the person who helps you load your gear at your shows and the person who you would trust with your money, like, that's who can manage you. If you have someone in your, like, a manager doesn't have to be some, like, I think there's like a preconceived notion of what booking agents and managers, et cetera, do in the music industry. And I think it's actually less work than what bands think it is to some degree. And I think if you get familiar with those aspects of your career and you can get comfortable with some of them, you'll find yourself having an easier time. And also that you can think of them in a creative fashion and kind of make things happen the way that you want to without compromise. So I don't know, like, it's kind of a hard thing. And I actually think, like, the ambiguity of what those people do and their responsibilities and the time to be ready for them is so different project by project that it's almost impossible to say. I think it's just something you feel out if the person is right and you feel like it's going to be mutually beneficial and that you have each other's best interests in mind. Like,
yeah,
you just have to be aware of your boundaries and what you want and how to respectfully move forward with another person and trusting them. The cool thing about music is that long as there's respectful dialogue, I mean, there's no harm in trying for a couple months and seeing if it works. Like, you're definitely allowed to have short relationships with other people and find out that it's not what you were looking for. And as long as both parties can respectfully look at each other and acknowledge what they want and say that they don't think that this is it, like, I don't think there's any problem with like flirting with those ideas. I think the hardest thing about music is people want concrete answers, and there isn't any, and there's no right path. And there's like just no like honest, like tried and true method to making sure everything is going to work the way it's supposed to. And I think failure is just a large part of it, and doing things you don't want to do, and being on tour for longer than you want to be on, and having hindsight to look back and not want to quit after you recognize maybe a year ago that you fucked something up astronomically, that you now have the wherewithal to recognize, but continue going. Like, I don't know. I feel like music is something that has no concrete answers. And it's just about trying your best to trust the people around you, and that they have that you have their best interest in mind and they have yours. And if you just operate with like respect towards everybody that's around you and being like polite Canadians.
Yeah. I did forget that I was speaking to a polite Canadian.
Yeah.
Do you have any like practices put in place for when things inevitably go awry at this point, especially touring so much? Like, is there anything you do to stay centered, for lack of a better term?
Yeah, actually, I think if I had any advice to bands, it would resonate with this. The one thing we do on tour that I don't hear a ton of bands talk about is that once a week, we sit down with each other and we allow ourselves to be emotionally vulnerable, and we allow ourselves to give each other the space to tell each other what is bugging us personally. And if what's bugging you has something to do with another member on tour, the member that you're telling this to, you obviously have to say everything you're saying in a respectful fashion and think about how you're going to present it, and present it constructively as much as possible. But the receiving party of whatever it is not allowed to get angry, and is not allowed to react strongly. But we all try and sit there and figure out the best path to reconcile a lot of those like small differences. Because I think being in a creative space, being in a business space, being around each other for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, sleeping in like precarious situations, I definitely think that the life that we get to lead is incredibly privileged, and I feel grateful that we get to do it. But I also think to not acknowledge the fact that there is like a pretty large swath of emotional health problems that can arise from so many small things adding up over and over again. I think if you're in a band or if you're touring with people, allowing yourself the space, and it has to be a sober space and it has to be quiet. You can't be doing it at like a dive bar while you're having 10 beers or something like that. Like, that's not conducive to like actually having a healing conversation with the people around you. But I think that is honestly probably one of the biggest keys to longevity that has worked for us, is just allowing ourselves the space to be heard and also just be respectful to each other with what we want to do and where we are at and what we need to feel safe and happy, like when you're away from home for sometimes stretches of 3.5 months at a time. Like, that just seems to have worked really well for us, and I would struggle to see what the negative side of that would be.
Yeah, that's incredible. Yeah, you're the first band I've spoken to. You know, people talk about communication, but that I've spoken to that says they have like a set practice like that. It's a great idea.
Yeah, I mean, I think I don't know how it works for other bands. It's another one of those things where there's no concrete answers to what you're doing. It's just. We know that we want to do this for a long amount of time, and we know we get on each other's nerves.
Right. Totally. I mean, human nature, it's bound to happen.
Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely. Like, we are definitely good friends, but I mean, spending 24 hours a day for 3 months straight on tour with someone, you're bound to have.
It's a recipe. Yeah, it's a recipe for animosity.
Yes.
Yeah. Is there any practices to bring levity to a situation when things do get a little intense? Any fun games or anything like that y'all do?
I think we all just have a good sense of humor.
Yeah.
And I also think that we've gotten very good at, if one person is having a particularly awful day on tour, if something has happened at home that they can't be there for, or if something is just emotionally going on, I think the rest of us have gotten very good at, not taking it personally and having a sense of humor about it and being able to recognize that, emotions are fleeting and they're not the end-all be-all of, the tour that you're on and the tour you're having. So I think there's just, a measure of, humor and also, a measure of, dropping the defensiveness that you feel when other people are mad around you. And you just have to, accept that when you're with somebody for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you're going to see a lot more than just them coming to hang out with you at practice for 3.5 hours.
Right. And that people are allowed to have feelings and that they change and evolve.
Yeah.
I would love to hear if you mentioned some singles. Are y'all working on any new material?
Yeah. This is definitely the first tool. I have publicly talked about it. And there's no scheduled release date or anything like that, but we definitely decided not to tour for the rest of this year to focus on creating new material. So I mean, I can't hold ourselves to any timeline necessarily, but I do know that the goal is to have some small increments of new music out next year so that in fall of 2020 we can hopefully get back out touring. But we definitely want a large swath of time right now to be at home and focus on being creative again. I think the two EPs and the record coming out a year after each other, definitely just the amount of time we spend touring, it feels like it's the right time to stay at home and actually work on the aspects of the band that get neglected on tour. So yeah, I'm hoping to have some new stuff out in 2020, but I don't know what it will look like or in what capacity or the timeline. So
I mean, I'm sure everyone will be happy to hear that y'all are writing or working on it.
Yeah.
I want to ask what your songwriting process looks like, but first, would you like to air any grievances or the opposite about what I perceive to be a pressure on not just musicians, but I feel like any content creator. So just be constantly putting stuff out there. Like if you don't have at least a release a year, it's you're risk getting lost in the shuffle, which feels very unfair to a certain extent. But yeah, any thoughts on that?
I think the only grievance I would air with it is that I personally feel, and everyone's experience is going to be different and subjective to their creation, but I don't feel it. Mm-hmm. I don't feel that pressure necessarily. But we also try and look at what we're doing as a 20-year endeavor. And I think if we can get 7 albums out over the next 20 years, regardless of if there's a 4-year gap between one of them, then I'm personally pretty happy with that amount of creative output and maybe some singles and stuff around there. But I think at a certain point, if you take stock of your mortality and timeline and the amount of time you get to be creative and the amount of time you're going to be willing to tour before life kicks in, and you ask yourself, realistically, how many works am I going to get out before I die? The number actually isn't that high, I think. And I think if you give yourself the space to be creative and accept that things don't have to be at just this immeasurable pace of like go, 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 and understand that, I mean, maybe something catches at some point and you end up getting to play a tour to like theaters, but if the come down from that is playing 300 person clubs again 3 years later, but you still have devoted people who enjoy your art. And like, I guess I personally like really admire bands like Deerhoof or like Deer Hunter, like these bands who have just put things out as they felt like they had something to say, but have been doing it for such a long amount of time that they've kind of curated and grown an amazing understanding fan base. Like, I think the quick ascension is massively overvalued. And I think if you're willing to look at the projects you're a part of and think of them long term, I think it will take a lot of that pressure off. But that's also from somebody who's sitting in a small town in BC with absolutely no one breathing down my neck at like a label or and not even our manager. Like, no one's breathing down my neck telling me to fucking like create now. So maybe there are people like that that are experiencing that that I haven't met, and it's different for them, and they're trying to like monetize some moment that they're having, which, I mean, I understand to some degree when you're an artist, and if you've spent the majority of your life pretty much in near bankruptcy, like maybe monetizing on that moment is like the most alluring thing in the world. But I don't know. I definitely just don't feel that pressure in my creative life, but that could just be like some huge privilege that I'm unaware of and just exuding all over everybody. So.
Or, I mean, I'd imagine that maybe a part of it is like designing a life in the now, in the today, that you're like pretty content or happy with in order to play the long game, right? Rather than having like more of an impatient perspective.
Yeah.
Like, I need to change my current situation like ASAP, right?
Yeah. And I guess like I look around and most musicians that I see aren't successful in their early and mid 20s. And it takes an incredibly long time. And I also have like no illusions about the fact that Blessed makes weird music, and it's not something that is going to just like immediately grab a bunch of people with some like wacko hyper single that like everybody loves for a couple months in the summer. Like, so I think planning accordingly to like what your creative vision looks like and being able to reconcile with the fact that, do you make music that does have big singles that catch? I don't. And with that being the thing, I think we plan accordingly to it, which takes a lot of stress off the idea of trying to make something like bop.
Right. Yeah. I think I'm a little naive, or very naive, when it comes to like the economics of music in general, sort of, but like, you know, how big a single has to be. Because I know tons of people who like the same type of music, or what feels like tons of people that like the same type of music I do, but really it's probably like 20.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, but like I talk to them all the time about it, so it feels like a lot.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't want to like project this image like I'm not ignorant as shit either. Like, I definitely am ignorant to a lot of things about music, and I'm definitely like, I mean, despite our experience and despite everything that we get to do, like, I definitely feel far from the best person to ask in regards to if you're going to stand in front of us and be like, how do I get really big? I have no idea, man. Don't play the style of music I do.
Right.
And I'm not trying to disparage the experience that I do feel that we can espouse to people, but that feels so much more conversational than it does like a teacher-student relationship. Like, I think it's just hard to view through that lens when we're talking about like things that we can offer other bands. It feels much more like peer-to-peer style than it does like top-down to me.
Yeah. I'm also like really obsessed with this idea of matching the right kind of weirdo media that has a big enough audience with weirdo music. I feel like there's opportunities out there, but again, there's lots of content, lots of bands.
Yeah, there's like a billion bands on Earth now. It's so
different. Sweet. Well, do you want to, is there like a high level approach to your songwriting process you want to talk to before, or speak to, before I ask you the last couple of questions?
Generally, I mean, this is kind of another one where it's like kind of one of those outside in questions where it's like, from the inside, like, I don't consider what we do highbrow or like high concept in any capacity when it comes to like the songwriting process. I think we're a fairly democratic group. A lot of the like initial concepts or skeletons will generally come from myself, but to be in a democratic project, I try and let go of as much as possible the vision that I have for a song once it's brought to the band, because somebody could have an idea that completely shifts the direction. And if I'm not open to that, then that's not really a democratic situation. I mean, I think in terms of our songwriting, we just really focus on what we want to hear.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the time when we're trying to be creative with each other or be creative in a space, we generally just play things over and over and over again and try them in different small ways and trying moving this note to that note or try playing that on a different instrument or definitely, I mean, I would say like the core concept of the songwriting once a skeleton has been brought is experimentation. Mm-hmm. There's like, we have a rule in our jam space where we're not allowed to not play an idea. No matter how ludicrous like an idea may sound to one member of the band, like if somebody comes in and is like, hey, I actually like this new song we're working on, I want you to try like playing a blues guitar solo over it. Like, no matter how wild that sounds to me, we do have a rule that if a one person in the band thinks that that is the correct path forward, we have to play it. We can't just outright say no without listening to it and figuring out what they wanted to achieve. So if somebody comes in with an idea for something they want to do in a weird time and someone already doesn't think it's a good idea, but it's going to take half an hour for us to figure it out and get tight to hear it properly, we do take the time to figure that thing out and let people hear their vision and let people hear what they wanted to hear happen. In reality, in like the actual physical space outside of their head, so that we can actually make an informed decision. And I find that maybe like 50% of the time we were right to immediately shoot it down without trying to do it, but the other 50% of the time we're like blown away by somebody suggesting something that initially sounds like something we would all dislike, and it ends up in a song. So I think just experimentation and not trying to shoot anything down and giving ourselves a massive swath of time. We're friends with this band called Tunic, who I don't know if you're familiar with, but they're this noise rock band from Winnipeg, for people listening. And it's really funny because they've completed writing their second record. And David texted me the other day, and he was like, just kind of telling me about it. And he asked where we were at, because we both released our records around the same time and started getting back to being creative around the same time. And this was a while ago, but he was like, where are y'all at? And we were like 3/4 of the way through the first song of like new material. I think we just grant ourselves like a really wide swath of time to make sure that things are the way we want them to be before we actually put them to tape.
I think everyone in the band also enjoys having that time for writing, being close together. Like, we like to take like extra days off work where we can just go in and have 10 hours so that we can really just focus on what we're doing. And we find that giving ourselves that space to have a bunch of time with what we're writing is really effective in getting stuff done and getting stuff to where we're stoked on it.
Great. I mean, whatever works. And I feel like being able to have time is a great thing.
Yeah, I mean,
we're looking for, right?
it definitely plays into what you were talking about before with, like, you feel pressure to constantly create. And it's like, we do constantly create. I just think we try and not, like, rush ourselves into, like, I've definitely been in bands before where we've released stuff that we weren't 100% behind. And that path has never resulted in us looking back being like, that was the right move.
Right. Yeah. That's very fair. And those are important lessons to learn along the way, right?
100%. Yeah. I mean, you definitely have to learn them to recognize, like, your boundaries as an artist, like, to say, like, when other people want you to take creative risks in the sense of, like, no, this is good. Like, it's done. Let's not keep working on it. Like, say you're with an engineer. This hasn't happened to us. But I mean, like, if you were with an engineer who was like, no, this is good. This is done. And you didn't feel 100% comfortable with it. Like, I definitely had to have the experiences where I let people release things that I had played on that I wasn't stoked on necessarily to realize that that isn't something I was willing to compromise on moving forward. And I think Blessed has been really fortunate because a lot of us are coming from bands previous to this one where we were able to learn a lot of these things. And even early on in the band, on our first tours and everything, we had to learn a lot. So it's been a fortunate growing experience.
Yeah, and it sounds like all of that likely contributes to, like, the energy thing I was alluding to earlier. It's like,
yeah,
you definitely. As a band working together.
I was listening to this podcast earlier where Adrian Lenkner of Big Thief said that before they recorded one of their records, like, her and her drummer were going on a bunch of runs together, and she thought that it attributed to, like, them being locked in because they were running and breathing at the same time and everything. And I thought that was kind of nice and cosmic to listen to. But I guess it all does feed into our playing with each other, et cetera, et cetera.
Totally. Cool. Last couple of questions that I ask everyone.
Shoot.
What does the word process mean to you?
Process to me immediately brings to mind figuring out how to get from B to A. I immediately just think of, like, having to go to coffee and figure out, like, Mitch and I spend a lot of time at this, like, small coffee shop where we're from called Old Hand, run by some good friends of ours, brother and sister-in-law. And it just immediately brings to mind, like, when we're in the process of maybe trying to finish the song, when we're in the process of trying to figure out where we want to go on tour, like, sitting down and writing out the appropriate steps to get from B to A.
Cool. Yeah. Starting backwards, essentially.
Yeah.
Or working backwards. Last question. What is something you're both excited about today?
Today?
Whoa.
Oh, actually, Mitch and I, right after we hang up, are actually about to go to the inaugural board meeting for a new small festival that we're trying to put together in the town we're from that is going to focus solely on outsider and, like, avant-garde music and art in our community that we're trying to start up for next year. So actually, yeah, it's a big day.
Yeah, it's a big day for that.
Awesome. So we have, like, 8 different members of our small community, including, like, a couple people from the city finally willing to sit down and, like, hear out kind of the cultural landscape here and how we want to, like, shine a spotlight on it while we still live here. And it's been a huge hurdle being here. So it's, like, an exciting first step towards maybe seeing some of this stuff come to fruition next year.
That's so rad. That's great.
Yeah,
so real last question, since you said that, which I'm infamous for lying about the last question. But
no worries.
Are there any bands or labels that you feel it from your specific area you feel like listeners should check out?
Yes. This question is always scary because you run the risk of leaving people out. But I'm going to do my best, and I'm going to keep it exclusively to the Fraser Valley. So, like, no Vancouver. It'll just be Mission, Chilliwack, and Abbotsford.
Yeah,
I really think that you should check out Loans. They're a band from here who write this incredible kind of, like, drive like Jehui, like jagged post-punk, and then their new stuff is starting to sound kind of like that in a mix with Big Star. They just recently played locally. I don't know if y'all know Teen Days. He's like an electronic artist, but he actually lives here. And I mean, there's some Kristen Witko. Yeah, there's this artist named Kristen Witko, and she's incredible. It's like this wild, like Fleetwood Mac, ABBA, kind of like, it's very genre defiant, amazing music. I mean, there's so many, and I feel really bad right now. But those three, if you just start going down like the recommended Bandcamp wormhole, and you actually check those out, and you start looking at artists on their posters from when they play locally and check those out, like, I understand that's a lot to ask in 2019, but like, if you're a music fan, like, and you do check these out, there are actually amazing bands from the Valley that don't tour too much and don't get out of Canada. So this might be your only interaction with them moving forward. And I'd encourage you to check it out. There's actually a wildly vibrant art scene here that, despite being pushed completely underground, manages to exist.
Great. I love a good Bandcamp wormhole. I'll definitely link to all those artists too.
Yeah, cool. Thank you. That'd be amazing.
Yeah. Thanks so much for doing this. I really appreciate both of your time.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, thanks so much for having us.
Cool. I was incredibly excited to be on. So, I mean, when y'all came up and introduced yourself to the New York show, I had already been listening to this show. So I was super happy.